Hey there, listeners. Thank you for taking time out of your week to listen in today. We're so glad you're here and are praying this message helps you. We also want to make sure you know about our latest podcast called the Anything's Possible Podcast. We've created it specifically with you in mind because we engage in deep conversations with people who are making both an impact here at our church and all around the city of Nashville. We believe everyone has a story to tell, a step to take, and that with Jesus, anything's possible. So make sure to subscribe today to the Anything's Possible podcast. You'll find it wherever you get your podcast. Okay, let's get you back to why you're here. Here's the latest message from Crosspoint Church.
I feel like the murder hornets haven't been nearly as bad as we expected. I wanted to start things off today with a positive note, and I think we can all agree that the murder hornets have not been terrible. That's a sentence I wasn't expecting to say in July. Want to hear another sentence I never expected to say in my entire life? I miss bachelorette parties. It's true. I did not see that coming. I miss seeing bachelorette parties in downtown Nashville. What I wouldn't give to just see one Amber and her friends tearing down Broadway in a pedal tavern screaming, "Red Solo Cup!" That's perhaps a very Nashville thing to miss. But there's no denying that right now, we're in a do-over moment. I'm in one right now. I speak for a living. I travel all over the country speaking to companies about goal setting, performances, and finishing the projects they start. Guess what's not happening right now? Live events. I just want to say to all the musicians in this city, all the musicians that are watching this, all the musicians in our church, I get it. I'm in the same trench as you are. But a few years ago, I actually wrote a book called Do Over. It was about handling unexpected transitions. And I learned four things that I want to share with you today. I put them in a list because lists are fun. So if you're taking notes, and I'm going to pretend that you are because that's one of the benefits of online events. I did a virtual event for a big insurance company recently, and they wanted me to say a word in French because it was an international company. And they said, "John, it's okay. Like, don't worry about it if the joke falls flat. We still want you to do it." And I said, if it falls flat, I won't know. I can't see anyone. I just assume that I'm killing it for 25 minutes and every one of you is dying laughing while also taking copious, copious notes. So right now at home, on the couch or the Peloton, if you're taking notes, here's the first thing you need to do to move forward in a season of do-over. Number one, look for the rocks. If you're looking for an example of people facing uncertain times, start with the Israelites. After 400 years of captivity, imagine that, 400 years, they've marched out into the desert with everything they can carry, with a guy they haven't seen in 40 years named Moses. Can you imagine how uncertain that was? So Moses, where have you been for the last four decades? Oh, hey, I had to flee because I murdered somebody. It's not a big deal. I just heard from a bush. I talked to a bush that was on fire. It was God. We're going to march through the Red Sea. It'll be fine. Grab your stuff. Stop asking so many questions. It would have been wild. We as people, we as a culture love to believe that the things we are experiencing right now are the worst they've ever been in the history of the world. But for me, if you asked me, I gotta go with the Israelites on this one. Their do-over started with 400 years of slavery, followed by a 40-year walk in the desert. Now, the Israelites experienced a series of miracles and now find themselves trying to make it to the promised land. It's probably the biggest do-over in the history of do-overs. And they made a lot of mistakes along the way, but there were times where the Israelites listened to the Lord and did smart things that made their do-over a whole lot better. One of them was altars. The Israelites often set up altars to remember the important times that God brought them through a really difficult situation. That's what they did in Joshua chapter 4. God has just parted the Jordan River, so the Israelites are able to cross through it. And after they did, they built an altar of 12 stones, one stone for each tribe. And Joshua said to the Israelites in Joshua 4:21, "In the future, down the road, years from now, decades from now, when your descendants ask, 'What do these stones mean?' When they ask their parents, 'What do these stones mean?' Tell them Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over." Now, why did Joshua tell them this? Because he knew that in the future, down the road, especially during new difficult times, people would be tempted to forget how God had come through for them in the past. The same is true of us, isn't it? When you go through a challenging season like this one, the one we're in right now, it's so easy to forget what the Lord has already done. And part of the problem is fear. Fear tells you a few lies. Fear tells you that this right now is forever. This is the new normal. This is forever. Fear tells you that this is the only do-over you've ever experienced. This is the very first one. Fear tells you that God has never come through in the past, but he has before and he will again. So you and I, we need to look for the rocks. What's a time when God has shown up for you? What's a moment when he's been faithful? What's a moment where you didn't think you were going to make it? Or maybe, what's an unexpected moment where God caught you by surprise? Maybe it was something small. You heard the same worship song 5 different times in the same week, a week where you needed it the most. Has that ever happened to you? At a store, in the car, at church? It's like that song won't leave you alone. It's like God is whispering to you. God is always trying to speak to us if we'll listen. Now, one of my rocks happened last fall. I went through a really difficult situation and I was just feeling crushed. I was so discouraged and felt this great sense of what's the point? Nothing ruins a do-over like a sense of what's the point. And I flew to Detroit so that I could grab a smaller plane and fly to Indianapolis. I've complained 1,000 times that it's crazy that there's not a direct flight from Nashville to Indianapolis. I feel like I can see Indianapolis from the Nashville airport. But I land in Detroit and I start looking around for my terminal. Now, the Detroit airport is the 10th largest airport in all of America. It's massive. So I finally find my terminal and I pull out my phone and I hear someone say, "Acuff? Acuff, is that you?" And I look up and there's my best friend from elementary school, Dave Bruce. I haven't seen him in years because he still lives in Massachusetts where I grew up. I can still drop a wicked cold real easy. And not only is Dave at the same airport as me at the exact same time on the same day, he's on the same flight. He's on my flight to Indianapolis. He's headed there too. There were maybe 100 people on that flight and he was one of them. We had dinner that night and I walked away feeling like a different person. And I just had to laugh with God. You ever get to laugh with God? He has a better sense of humor than we give him credit for. In the midst of a really difficult situation, in a season where I just felt beat up, he was like, You know what would be kind of cool? Like, what if I put your best friend from elementary school on your plane to Indianapolis to remind you of who you really are? What if I did that just because I like to do stuff? That's a rock. Look for them in your own life. The second thing I want you to do, I want you to take manna for the moment. I didn't know that I was a control freak until I didn't have any. The truth is that in January, before everything fell apart, I didn't really have any control. I didn't. I thought I did, but I wasn't in control of what would happen next spring or next winter, but I could pretend, right? I had the illusion. Now, though, you and I can't pretend. It turns out that I, John Acuff, have zero control over a global pandemic. I've tried, trust me, I have. I found a text message I sent a friend on March 15th, and I promise you this is what it said. I think the first half of the year is going to be tough for a lot of people. The first half, isn't that adorable? Oh, it's so cute. I was such a babe. What a summer prince. As if in July we'd be like, nah, that's a wrap. It's all over. Wrap it up, we're done. Thanks, Rona, you've been real. If only. Now I keep learning this year that I can only live in this moment. I can only be in this moment right here, and I can't try to control what's going to happen 1 month, 1 week, 1 year from now. And I really think that's what God was trying to teach the Israelites with the manna. In Exodus 16:4, the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day." And I think that's really important to remember. It's just for that day. It's not for that week. It's not for that month, it's not for that year. That's why we're told his mercies are new every morning. Not this morning or that morning or that morning, every morning they're new. And today's mercy won't sustain you for a week. It won't. You're going to meet next week's mercy when you get to next week. The Israelites are like you and I, though. They tried to gather up as much as they could. They tried to store it up. They tried to live today on last week's manna, but it never worked. I've tried to do the same thing. I realized this summer that I often try to hold my breath with God. I read the Bible verse in the morning, like I read a verse here, and I watch church on Sunday, and then I hold my breath hoping that I can just make it to the next Sunday, or just one breath of air is going to be enough, but I can't. Most days, if I'm honest, I can't make it from my quiet time in the morning to my quiet time the next day. I can't hold my breath. I need God moments all week and all day. I think of them like snorkels. In 2012, Tom Siatis, a German freediver, held his breath underwater for 22 minutes and 22 seconds. Now, before you get too excited, though, the Guinness Book of World Records only has his time at 19 minutes and 30 seconds because of a hyperventilating controversy. How tough are the folks at Guinness? No. He's clearly hyperventilating and almost dying. We're not going to count his full time, all right? Stop the clock. Nice try. That's an impressive time and one that surely took years of physical, mental, and emotional training. But here's the thing. Unfortunately for Tom, the world record holder, I could beat. I'd even crush him if I got to use a snorkel. I could beat anyone in the world in a breath-holding contest if they allowed me to use a snorkel. That would be the only condition I'd put on the contest. Body of water doesn't matter, time of year, preferred swimsuit. I'll concede to every other rule, but I must insist on using a snorkel. How long could I stay underwater with one? An hour? A day? Snorkels make something impossible, breathing underwater, possible. The same is true when it comes to spending time with God. It makes impossible situations possible. Now, you're going to need some snorkels this year, especially around school, right? School is going to be stressful this year. Is it going to be all virtual, partially virtual? Will I have to homeschool? Is football going to be canceled? Is that a terrifying sentence in the Southeast? It is. Do I need to become a homeschooling expert? How much more do I have to Zoom? Like, is anyone else over Zoom? I've got what they call Zoom fatigue. I also have to confess that I spend 90% of my time on Zoom calls staring at my own face. I didn't know how captivating my face was until I started to use Zoom. I'm always like, whoa, what is going on with that face? It looks so frustrated and angry. Don't cross your arms. That's defensive body posture. Smile. So randomly in Zoom, I was just go, This summer is weird. This fall is going to be weird. We're going to need some manna. We're going to need some snorkels so that we can do the impossible. Now, I don't know what yours are. Maybe it's a daily devotional. Maybe it's a walk with a friend. Maybe it's going to Radnor and just sitting by the water for a little bit. Maybe it's some journaling. Regardless of what it is, if you're going to live in this day, you have to look for some manna for the moment. The third thing that I think we should do is be careful about what we consume. One of my favorite Bible verses is in Romans 12:2. Here's what it says. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now, I just wrote a book about overthinking. It doesn't come out until April, but I've been thinking about my thinking a lot. And I kept coming back to the idea of what does it mean to not be conformed to the pattern of this world? I couldn't really figure it out until I started noticing how afraid I was. I just felt full of fear and dread about everything. I kept asking myself, why am I so afraid right now? Then one day I realized I was watching a news program with a running global death ticker. It was like a stock ticker, but it was just spinning faster and faster and faster as each person died of COVID. And I thought, it's weird that I'm afraid right now and feeling a sense of dread. I wonder what could be contributing to that. Then I'd go back to the news or worse, scroll through social media. I was spending 8.5 hours on Twitter every week. That's a full workday, 8.5 hours. Have you been on Twitter lately? It is not the nicest neighborhood. I would go on, read a series of terrible headlines, and then I'd go follow a handful of accounts to see who should I be mad at today. And I just felt this terrible sense of anger. I felt like it was this buffet of rage and sarcasm and political screaming. Finally, in the midst of all of that, I felt like God tapped me and reminded me and said, hey, what you consume is what conforms you. What you consume is what conforms you. I was consuming about 20 hours of social media a week. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and less than 2 hours of Bible each week. Now, if you do something for 20 hours a week and you do something else for 2 hours a week, the 20-hour activity will have a greater impact on you. That's not some great spiritual lesson either. That's just math. So as you go through this do-over, ask yourself, what am I consuming right now? Kevin mentioned that last week. Remember when he said, if you're not inhaling forgiveness, you can't exhale it either? That's about consuming. Maybe it's time to hit pause on a social media app. I deleted the Twitter app from my phone 2 months ago. I just couldn't do it anymore. I would just open my phone and it would automatically go there. My thumb would just go to Twitter, go to that blue icon, and I couldn't help it. I had to finally delete it. It just wasn't good for me. Maybe it's not an app for you. I mean, I still have Twitter on my computer. I still use it as part of my job, but I just couldn't have it that close on my phone, the device that I carry all the time. But maybe it's not that simple for you. Maybe it's something bigger. Maybe for you, it's worry. Right now, you're mainlining anxiety and stress. I went through a few different phases during this do-over year. The first was denial. When stuff started getting canceled in the spring, I was like, no big deal. It's gonna be fine, everybody. Don't worry about it. We'll be fine by like next week. I remember I was walking into a meeting in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and thinking, this will all be over by May. And one of the people in the meeting said, hey, did you just hear they canceled March Madness? I sat in that meeting, refreshing my phone, just watching pieces of my normal world fall like dominoes. When my wife told my kids that there are going to be some big challenges this summer and our neighborhood pool wasn't going to be as fun because you couldn't bring guests, I immediately said, it'll be a different kind of fun. And she stopped me and said, whoa, you're in denial right now. You think things are going back to normal tomorrow and I get to feel this feeling. I get to express sadness. Don't rush right by my feelings as you try to force some fake positivity before you've even admitted what's really going on. Ooh, are you married to someone who tells you the truth too? God bless that Jenny Acuff. Then after denial, I moved into anger. I was just kind of angry about the whole thing. I wanted to point the finger and blame any and everyone I could find. I was just grumpy. The next phase I entered after that was the Tiger King phase. Did you go through that one too? That was a doozy. The weirdest part of that show, and it was all weird, is that he didn't live in Florida. Didn't you just assume that if you own 200 jungle cats and have a sick mullet, they make you move to Florida by law? I just assume they drive up in like a fan boat and say, get in, Exotic Joe, you have to leave Oklahoma. Now after that phase, I just moved into fear. I got afraid. I felt this great amount of fear. And I think there are a lot of people consuming that right now. Some of you watching at home right now know exactly what I'm talking about. I've been thinking about that a lot. And I think part of the problem for me, and maybe for you too, is that I've spent most of my life trusting in conditional peace. I had peace, but only if the conditions were right. If I finished a project on time, I felt peace. If I made a certain amount of money, I felt peace. If I had a good conversation or got invited to the right party or had a great event, I felt peace. I only had conditional peace, but then COVID hit and none of the conditions matched my definition of peace and it evaporated. So I started to try to figure it out. I felt this great pressure, this weight on my shoulders to figure out the world. If I could just figure out what the fall is going to look like, if I could just figure out what back to school is going to look like, if I could just figure out what my job or my city is going to look like, then I'd find peace. But I can't do it. I can't figure this season out. John's peace is not working right now. And I learned something in that moment. We're not supposed to figure it out. In fact, that's something God will never, ever say to you. God never says, you figure it out. He actually says the exact opposite. Proverbs 3:5-6 says something really important. Here's what it says. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. Kevin talked about that last week when he talked about what does it look like for us to submit our will to God's. He used the analogy of the garden and said, God, plant something new here. I kept feeling stressed out because I kept trying to lean on my own understanding, but that's not what God says I have to do. I don't have to figure this out. I just have to trust in the Lord with all my heart. We're actually told that we won't even be able to understand the peace. One of my favorite passages in the entire Bible, one you've heard so many sermons about, is Philippians 4, 4 through 7. And it says, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. The peace of God transcends all understanding. It's beyond our understanding. It's bigger than our understanding. It's not conditional peace. It's unconditional peace. It's peace despite your circumstances, not because of your circumstances. That's the kind of peace that I want. The rest of that passage, by the way, is impossible without God's peace. If you're not consuming that on the daily, there's no way you can rejoice always. Because that's the verse. The verse doesn't say, rejoice when things make sense. Doesn't say, rejoice when the economy is up. Doesn't say, rejoice when your political party is on top. It says, always. I'm convinced the only way we can do that is with a peace that transcends our understanding. The things you consume either feed your fear or they feed your faith. Choose wisely. The fourth and final thing I think we need to do is walk with empathy. People are stressed out right now. Have you picked up on that a little bit? Folks are running hot. I had to quit the Nextdoor app too, because I need to live with and love my neighbors, and that app was not helping either of those goals. We're called to love our neighbors, but what does that look like in a practical sense? I think it means we have to have empathy for them. Now, I know empathy sounds like a soft, fuzzy word, like a candle flavor at Bed Bath & Beyond, but here's how I define it. Empathy has two parts, understanding what someone needs and acting on it. So how do we do that first part? Well, here's the easiest way I know possible. Read less minds, ask more questions. Now, if you're into grammar, I need to apologize. I know that should be read fewer minds, technically, but less was a better rhythm, and rhythm is a dancer, so I went with less, and I feel good about my decision. But have you ever tried to guess someone's need? It's nearly impossible. You know what's a lot easier? Just ask them, hey, what do you need? Hey, how can I help? Hey, how's your week going? The questions don't have to be magical or complicated. There's a crazy thing that happens when you do this. When you ask someone what they need, they become visible and valuable. People want to know two things, that you see them right now in this moment, and that they're important, especially now because crisis magnifies kindness. Let me say that again. A crisis magnifies kindness. The little things you do right now are worth 100 times what they were 6 months ago. Why? Because we're all starving for community. I went trail running one day, and it was a huge trail, so you could be socially distanced. And I passed an elderly man who I had seen the week before. And when I did, he gave me a double thumbs up. And it was such a small gesture, but I promise you, it changed my whole day. I told my wife about it when I got home. I'm telling you about it right now. 6 months ago, I might have seen that and thought, what's that guy's problem? Who gives a double thumbs up in the woods? Seems extravagant. A single thumb, maybe, but a double, it seems wasteful. Now, though, I was moved by that because crisis magnifies kindness. Have empathy for your neighbors, your family members, and coworkers. Ask them what they need and then act on it. At the same time, have some empathy for yourself. I loved when Kevin talked about mulligans in week one. We're good at giving them in golf, aren't we? We're even good at giving them in football. I mean, when there's a new coach, how do we describe their first year? We call it a rebuilding year. We know it'll take some time, and we give them a little bit of grace. They won't have their recruits or their players or their system in place, so we give them some space for them to grow. Why do we have such a hard time giving ourselves rebuilding years? Maybe that's what 2020 is for you. It's a rebuilding year. It hasn't gone the way you wanted. It hasn't been easy. It's been confusing. But what if this was a rebuilding year? What if even though you've made mistakes, you've blown it, or you've fallen once or twice or 1,000 times during the pandemic, God is still saying, I love you. I sent my son for you. I'm crazy about you. There's a verse that's become one of my themes for this year. It's Proverbs 34:8. And this is what it says. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Do you know what I love about that verse? It doesn't say perform perfectly for the Lord, and then you'll earn a taste. It doesn't say, stop making the same mistake over and over and over again, even though you promised not to, and then you'll get a taste. It doesn't say, stop crushing so many white claws, and then you'll get a taste. That one just got personal. Nope, it doesn't say any of those things. In fact, it says the opposite. It says taste and see if the Lord is good. Experience his love and then you'll know. Experience it first and then you'll know. If that sounds too good to be true, I agree. It is. All of it is. The gospel is way too good to be true, but that's what makes it so amazing. It is true and it is a gift. Have some empathy for yourself. Can you imagine what would happen if you loved you like God loved you? And if you don't feel qualified to be part of what God is still doing in Nashville, remember, God found Gideon in a hole. He found Joseph in a prison. He found Daniel in a lion's den. He has this curious habit of showing up in the midst of trouble, not the absence. Where the world sees failure, God sees future. Next time you feel unqualified to be used by God, remember this. He tends to recruit from the pit, not the pedestal. Now, I can't wait to be back at the Franklin campus when it's full. I can't wait to see Kevin Robinson, who I wish was Kevin Robinson. If he would get an extra N in his name, that would be so much easier for me, but he's being a little bit selfish. I can't wait to see Rob Santel and Amy Fenton and all my friends at this campus. But until then, I'm going to keep looking for rocks. I'm going to keep taking manna for the moment. I'm going to keep checking on what am I consuming? And I'm going to keep walking with empathy. Now, speaking of manna and the bits of joy that sustain us in this season, there's a song that's been doing that for me. It's by Josh Garrels, and it's called Farther Along, and it's one of the best songs ever written, in my opinion. Now, right now, you're going to be real tempted to shut that laptop. This is the wrap-up moment. We see you coming. Or you're going to go out and get some more coffee and be like, I can get coffee during the song. Jesus is okay with that. Jesus is fine with you drinking coffee during a song. But I dare you to stay here for a few more minutes and hear this song. I asked him to put the lyrics up because I don't want you to miss a single word. I'm going to pray, and then the band is going to melt your face right off. That's a direct quote from the Bible. This song will melt your face right off. It's in Hebrews. Don't just trust me. Probably. This song you're about to hear captures what a do-over is like, and I don't want you to miss it. You're going to love it. I promise. Let's pray. God, thank you for never being surprised by seasons like this. Thank you for teaching us over and over again that you always show up. I just pray that it would be so obvious to see your rocks this week. As we go about our days, as we go about our hours, as we go about work, help us see rocks. In Proverbs, it says that wisdom screams in the street trying to help people. Lord, make it that obvious. Don't hide the rocks. May the rocks be the size of mountains. May we be reminded of who you are and who we are in you all week. Lord, as we walk into this week, give us empathy. Give us more grace than we can muster. In the grocery store where people are tense and they're going down aisles certain ways and there's a lot of frustration and fear and anger, Lord, let us be the examples. Give us empathy for the people in our neighborhoods, the people in our families. Give us empathy for ourselves. Let us see ourselves like you see us. Show us who we really are and what you see when you look at us. Lord, show us what we're consuming. Show us what doesn't need to be in our life. If there's a part of us that's feeding on fear, Lord, show us how to shut that door. Show us how to walk away from that anxiety. Show us how to delete an app that's not filling us. Lord, give us a simple idea that if we walk away from a social media app and we don't feel refreshed and renewed and we only feel exhausted and attacked, maybe it's time to let that one go. Maybe it's time for us to move beyond that. And then God, give us the grace and the courage to take manna for the day. We want to take manna for the whole week or the whole month because then we get control again. Then we don't have to worry about trusting you. Then we get to go do our own thing. But God, you say, this is for today. This will sustain you today. Lord, give us a today relationship with you, a today relationship that sustains us for these hours. And the next day, we get new mercies. And the day after that, we get new mercies. Lord, thank you for being a God who loves a do-over.
Cheer up my brothers. them both. We're all castaways in need of ropes, hanging on by the last threads of our hope. In a house mirror full of smoke, confusion, illusions I've seen. Where did I go wrong? I sing along to every chorus of the song that the devil wrote like a piper at the gates, leading mice and men down to their fate. Some will courageously escape the seductive voice with a heart of fate, while walking the line back at home. There's so much more to life than we've been told. It's full of beauty that will unfold and shine like you struck gold, my wayward son. The dead weight burden wastes a ton. Go down to the river and let it run. Wash away all the things you've done. Forgiveness. For my soul, I got no place left to go. Cause I got changed, but what I've been shown is more glory than the world has known. Keeps me rambling on, skipping like a cat flows from its star. I'm free to love once and for all. And even when I fall, I get back up from the joy that overflows my cup. Heaven filled me with more than enough. Walk down my levees and my bluffs. Let the flood wash me. And one day when the sky rolls back on us, some rejoice and the others fuss. Cause every knee must bow and tongue confess. The Son of God is forever blessed. This is the kingdom and we're the guests. So put your voice up to the